Paragraph 30 of my submissions, I referred to the Schedule C requirement in relation to the ephemeral
youth bodies, so various versions drop of them all, but some parties are still wanting those to be included. I've got a reference there to 162.713 kilometres has been estimated in relation to the fencing that will be required on Lockhill. That's to fence ephemerals where they've been estimated. The other bit of detail in the schedule that I just wanted to raise attention to is in Mr. Robinson's evidence. He refers to having 94% of the farm with reticulated water and having stock dams and so forth. Those stock dams, from my understanding, they've dug a hole and it fills up the water and it's a reservoir. They call them stock dams, they're not actually damming anything, but they're a reservoir. And when I look at Schedule C and also the definition of lake in an environment in the RMA, a lake is an inland water body surrounded by. There's your reservoir. I'd be pretty surprised if any party is anticipating that a stock reservoir, a drinking water reservoir, should be fenced, and then outside the fence there should be a trough so that the water goes out of the reservoir into the trough or out of the reservoir and then to the other troughs. But as written, it's a lake which would require fencing, and essentially you're trying to fence it from animals to stop them standing in the reservoir where they could normally stand in the trough. You will have picked up from Mr. Robinson's evidence that the koi carp issue is a huge one for him on the property. And the very low stocking rate on Lockhill wasn't apparent in his earlier evidence, and I don't know to what extent that may have affected Ms. MacArthur's comments and her rebuttal as to why his concern is so great. I noted that Dr. Robertson was unable to identify any particular plans that the department has in relation to those pest species, or koi carp in particular. And his evidence, and fair enough, is that it is a problem, but not as great a problem as some of the others that need to be sorted out first. And I accept that. However, that's also typical in the farming sector, in that there will be problems which will not be of the same significance on every property. And maybe there is a variety from place to place in terms of prioritising that. Moving to the sub-catchments, again we've got a situation here where 120 hectares in one sub-catchment and 3,500 in another, and because the Whangapae catchment had a earlier priority, even though the priority table's gone, the catchments listed have the dates at which things have to be done to achieve your permitted activity status or to be done triggers for Plan Change 1. And the way it's written at the moment, that 120 hectares now triggers the entire farm to have to achieve the outcomes as per the Whangpei catchment, which is in year one. Sorry, yes, year one or year two? Year two, maybe. That property is actually on the other side of a road. I've said in my submissions, I've referred to it being on the southern side of McCutcheon Road. It's actually on the other, on the southern side of Ngatakitaki Road. Lockheel has offered up the opportunity for the court to come on a site visit. We haven't been specific about the things that the court might want to see. Clearly for Mr. Robinson, he would want you to see if he can get you down to the screen where the koi kata actor. The difficulty with that is going to be actual access, and it's pretty wet, so it's just getting a vehicle across there, across to there. It may be that as the course of the hearing pans out, there may be a number of things that the court considers that would be interesting to have a look at. And I'm sure Lockheel would be keen to facilitate that. And those are my submissions.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honour.
Excuse me, sir. Just before my friend calls her witness, I did want to just register the Director General's concern with filing of new evidence, which is what the amendments. There are some amendments in Mr. Robinson's evidence, in particular in response to Ms. McArthur, who has not had an opportunity and has already presented evidence. So, sir, I'm just wanting to raise it, the Director General.
Is there anything in particular you'd like us to disregard or strike out, or is it simply the process issue?
It's just the process issue, yes. Sir. Fairness and not opening up a floodgate for other rights.
Well, yeah, I think this court has concerns about floodgate type issues, and I don't wish to encourage people departing from the evidence timetable. If there had been any particular issue about anything that was contained there, we could pursue that. Of course, one of the things about the way in which our process works is that we have all of the evidence circulated in advance, and the court reads it ahead of the hearing. We have routinely offered an opportunity, as I offered to Mr. Pennell earlier, a chance to update or deal with anything. And of course, in an ordinary witness action, in the real courts, they do the same thing as well. So I hear what you have to say, and I do want counsel to just bear that in mind for the future. But I just note that you're not seeking us strike anything out.
No, sir.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Can you finally continue the accuracy of the day and affirm that the evidence you're about to give this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Please can you confirm your full name is Kim Philip Robinson and you're a CEO of Lockheel Farmlands Limited.
Correct.
And you've prepared a brief of evidence that you updated on the 3rd of October 2023.
Correct.
Do you have any corrections to your evidence?
I think it's 17. Should be production. And where it says recovery, it means the same, but an 18, it should read production. And then on
what should read production?
Where it says weather events, 2 years to repair, it should mean 2 years for production.
Okay, so on the updated evidence, that's paragraph 18.
And the other one is just the settlement of the toy car stuff, which has been that they have been removed.
And I think Mr. Robinson, it's paragraph 27. In your second sentence there.
26 it is.
Right. And that.
So the length of the white tier is correct, but the amount of silk that toys have, we want that removed.
And at paragraph 36?
26.
No, moving on to paragraph 36.
And just where it says cows, it should be cattle in paragraph 36.
Thank you. And you attended the expert conferencing on farm systems?
Yes.
And you participated in all of the mediations except for the point source discharges?
Correct.
Please can you provide the court with some context about the Lockheel Farm Environment Plan and the changes that you've made on the farm?
We started in 2007. I got asked to participate in the balanced environment rules. So we started. That's where it all started. The farm is such that it's fragile. It's limestone, and if you overstock it or knock it around, it bites you. So we got involved in the fencing, and that was done because of the topography and the way we wanted to run the farm, the way it was. We couldn't do it without doing the fencing. So that's where we started, and that evolved to the Balanced Environment Award. So we went into that, and it's just grown from there, really. And then we did the farm environment plan. We wanted to see where we were at. When PC1 was first mentioned, so we got that done. And then there's things that are pretty good and there's things that are not so good that we have to tidy up, which we're still working on, work in progress.
Have you got any further changes planned?
We've got some waterways that aren't fenced, that are not heavily infested with. We don't run cattle out of there because of the topography. That's a handful of paddocks that are not reticulated, so we're going to get water into those, and then and that'll be that sort.
Ms. MacArthur talked about temporary fencing of ephemeral waterways. You got any comments about that?
If you see in my evidence and paragraph, you see from the 28th of January, from the 8th of January this year to the 28th of January, we had 450 metres of rain. And to fence and family waterways, to be perfectly blunt, fencing was the easy bit, and just maintaining them it would be an absolute nightmare. To try and get staff down there when to fix them in wet conditions, and then you've got wires all floating around, you've got cattle hooked up in wires, you've got sheep hooked up in wires, and of course more damage than the runoff in my view. I'm talking about one that's about 600 hectares out the back of the farm, and in the winter time we might run 200 cows out there, set stock, and be used rotating around through that block. Summertime when it's dry, pull my cows up and rotate that through it, but in the winter time it's not suitable for mob stopping cattle, it's too fragile, so we have to farm accordingly.
Your evidence says that you don't know how many 50 square metre wetlands are on Lockie or can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, as I just said, the gullies and its parts of it have got just oozes and they just bubble up. If you put a track around somewhere, it bubbles up. I don't know what it is, it just comes up through the limestone. Where it comes from, I wouldn't have a clue. We've got one particular paddock out the back that's hellishing wet in the winter time, and yet it's on the road. We've got the road going across the main road, and the tucky tuck goes across the top of it. I wouldn't have a clue where the water comes from. And it's right on the top of the ridge, so that's just the topography that we live in. And I wouldn't even hazard a guess at how many small wetlands or waterways that we have.
How long does it take for you to get around your farm?
To ride the whole farm a day.
Have you had a look at the latest Federated Farmers version of Schedule C?
Is that the one with setbacks?
That's the one that came through last week. There's a copy here. Have you got any comments about it?
I think the 10 metre setbacks from the wetland, I just think that's unachievable. For us, I think there's other mitigating ways that we can do it, and we've got what we call filter systems and reticulated water, and what we're finding, if you've got reticulated water in your paddocks, the cattle don't know if they're going to eat them. And then in the winter time, we don't run that many cattle in those wet paddocks anyway, so it's not really an issue for us. But I just think that 10 metre setbacks is unachievable.
And can you explain to the court a little bit about why you're so passionate about the koi carp issue?
We see that on a daily basis, and when this process came out and we started looking into it, it doesn't matter what, and I'm not talking about Lockyer here, as much as all farmers in the Waikato, the Aroa stream is hugely infested with coarcut. And they do spread, in my evidence, you'll see photos of a dam that floods and they got trapped there, and I think we stopped counting at 100. I just think that unless they're addressed in some way, shape or form, then the water quality in the Waikato and the contributing streams is not going to improve.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. We can just wait for questions from other persons.
Mr. Robinson, board. I'm going to start with paragraph 44 of your updated evidence. And you say there, rural 3.11.4.4, bracket 2, is supported in an appropriate mechanism for stock exclusion, as every farmer will likely require a tailored solution to mitigate stock from water waste. A farmer should not be penalised for meeting should receive a tailored solution that provides the same or similar outcome as achieved. And by a tailored solution that's going to achieve the same or similar outcome, do you mean the alternatives to fencing?
So could you just say last word again, please?
When you're talking about a tailored solution that achieves the same or similar outcome,
yep.
Are you talking about those as being alternatives to fencing?
Good.
And what kind of methods are available to achieve that?
Well, reticulated water for one. I mean, we're not running concentrated stock loops. And where we are, that's all fenced and water. But out in the main water bodies, or the main areas where the intermittent waterways, we're not running big enough stock loops to pollute. And that's why we put the filter systems in the wetlands filter systems, call it what you like, but that's what they're there for, to mitigate any runoff and stuff.
Okay, and other things might be location of water troughs and provision of shade, grazing management, residual covers, stock policy, management over the winter period, or use of supplementary feed, all things that would be alternatives to fencing, you think?
Yeah. We don't supplementary feed in the farm. It's too wet.
Right. Okay, so, and that one aside, in your practical experience as a farmer, can these types of measures be effective as alternatives to fencing?
Yep, I'm just struggling to hear you, sorry.
Is that better?
Yep, thanks.
In your practical experience as a farmer, can these measures be effective as alternatives to fencing?
Yeah.
Okay. In paragraph 47, you talk of 325 kilometres of fencing as potentially being required, which is both sides of your waterways, I gather.
Yeah.
Could that be reduced if alternative methods were available instead of fencing?
Well, we've already done it. Some of it is, I don't know, with any wetlands that go down the hill, we've fenced those right off and blown them. But then we've just picked a line around, some of them might be 2 metres, 3 metres, 4 metres, so it's just, we've just put a line around it really. Is that what you're asking?
Perhaps not quite, but I understand you've calculated about 325 kilometres of fencing required to comply with SD1?
Yep.
And I'm just trying to get at, we've been through the alternatives to fencing that are available, and just getting your confirmation that if you can implement some of those alternatives, the water troughs, the shading, etc., the other things, then that could reduce the amount of fencing that would be required.
I just think with the amount of fencing that would be required, I think it would cause more harm than good. Yeah.
The fencing would cause
the fencing. I'm not hearing you properly. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
Could you just?
Yeah, I'm just looking for confirmation that the length of fencing that you calculated there is perhaps a worst case scenario, because if a tailored solution is available, then it can reduce that length of fencing.
We had a consultant do that.
Right. Are you going to say in your evidence that while there are water bodies on flat sections that are fenced and are easy to fence, to create an obligation that requires strict fencing to all water bodies makes no sense, that some water bodies cannot be reached? Just to clarify there, are you talking that the water bodies can't be reached by the fencing contractors, or they can't be reached by the stock?
Well, just by fencing contractors. It's just the default of your it'll be all handwork for starters.
Right.
So you fly the gear in there with a helicopter if you were going to do it. And to be fair, that would be the easy bit. Maintaining it once you had the weather events that we've been having would be huge.
Right. And do you think that could potentially be dealt with if a farm certifier was able to certify that fencing is not practicable?
Well, the farm environment plan that I've done, with all of those things we have mitigated. So we're those offending waterways, we've got mitigation in those paddocks by water troughs.
Right, and where are there are these challenges, the topography, etc., things that make it hard for a fencing contractor to get in there and put it up. That concern could be alleviated if a farm certifier was able to say fencing is not practical in those circumstances. Yeah. I just want to go to paragraph 62, which relates to the application dates in table 3.11-2. Now, you say there that the application date should be determined by the subcatchment that the single operating unit is majority located within. So that approach you've just described there is the approach that table takes for single property farms, and the way I read your evidence, you're seeking the same approach for multi-property farms which are a single operating unit, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that because a small part of Loch Eel is in a high priority catchment, but most of it's in a lower priority catchment? So that's the circumstances of your particular farm. Could you also see a scenario where a minority part of a large multi-property farm, not necessarily yours, but another one, could still be a significant area in the context of a high priority catchment?
Yeah, could be. Yep.
And then your proposal that significant area would not be prioritised for earlier consenting, despite being in a high priority catchment.
Yes, I'm hearing you right, yes.
Okay, no further questions from me. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Robinson. Hey, I've just got some questions for you around the koi carp, of course, and then around wetlands generally, and in terms of the fencing and exclusion. So that's the kind of questions or areas that I'll be focusing my questions on for you. If you just let me know if you can't hear me, we actually need to say things again. So I just wanted to pick up also on my friend, he asked you questions about fencing and alternatives to fencing. I think your evidence was that there are alternatives to fencing, and one of those includes reticulated water. Is that one of the alternatives? And so from the direct side, I'm the lawyer for the dock, and so one of the concerns being raised from farms like yourself is the stock excursions that I was speaking, and the setbacks and the fencing. And so we're trying to, well, what I'm trying to do is get an understanding of the practicalities around doing that, because that I hear is a concern, I accept that. And so I was just intrigued, you mentioned an alternative was reticulated water. And I'm just picking up on some evidence from Federated Farmers, when we've talked about reticulated water, and in this case it's from the real one, theory. We talked about his neighbour and how his neighbour has put in water reticulation some years ago, but the amount having to put in pumps and it had to be over quite a long period of time. But I guess the point I'm wanting to pick up there is that he spent around $500,000 to put that in over a period of time, something like $80,000 a year. How does that compare to the cost you would incur there?
We've done a lot of it ourselves, but yes, it is a huge cost if you get someone in to do it. It's just part of it. What we started when we started doing this, and we knew to do it. The Mugger Tear Stream, which is the one we test, starts and finishes within Lock Hill. That's the only good water we have. We're very lucky that we found two bores in strategic parts of the property. So one does one section of the farm, and the other bore does the other section of the farm. And I suppose it would have cost us $300,000 or $400,000 over the course of 20 years to do it. But as I say, we started it way back, and as we can just progress. It is a major cost.
And so fencing would also be a major cost if you could get started and work in a long time.
Especially now it's huge. Yes.
And is it something you could work on over time as well to get in place?
As I said before, it's not the fencing. It's the, whilst it's a huge cost to do the fencing, it's actually what happens after it's fenced. And if I go back to the Mugger Tear Stream, in the middle of summer, the Mugger Tear Stream, you can hardly see it thrown through the bits that I've fenced off, the edges. You get a wet along, and it's 75 metres across. So it's even that fence, we've got most of that fenced off, and we're always repairing that particular fence because it's our main catchment, and that goes through a filter system. But I mean, the whole thing gets flooded, and the flats get flooded, and it's pretty hard to mitigate when you're getting extreme weather conditions.
And
so that's what I'm saying about the fencing. Fencing is one thing, maintaining it's another. Mm-hmm. And I just think that fencing it causes more problem to damage waterways than not fencing in some cases. On infernal waterways, I'm talking, like i.e. gullies. I mean, we're all still struggling to find out what is an infernal waterway and what isn't. I mean, there's a technical term in here, but in reality, it's totally different.
Right, thank you for that. That's been helpful to understand other alternatives to fencing. Just to go back now to the koi carp, and so, you'd appreciate Mr. McCarthy hasn't had an opportunity to respond to some of the comments here, so I'll do my best I can in her place. So, with regards to paragraph 28 of your updated evidence, refer to Ms. McCarthy's rebuttal, and then in relation to the Auckland Tear Stream, and on average at a time of testing for koi carp, it was approximately 5 metres wide across the 400-metre distance. Now, I'm going to get a bit technical here with you, but did you actually physically measure that distance?
Yeah, it was done in this report. It was done professionally. These guys do all Auckland's best fish eradication, and we engaged them to do this for us.
And that's attached to your evidence, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And so, Ms. McCarthy's comments in relation to the extent, you referred to here in terms of the tonnage of koi carp,
She's based that on her experience as a well-experienced scientist or a quality expert. Are you disputing that what she said is incorrect? And so with looking at the photograph, I think it's figure 4, page 10 of your evidence, there's a little bit of vegetated buffer and fencing, but only on one side. Could the fact that there's not fencing fully also contribute to the extent of degradation in that water body?
Yeah, that on the bottom side that's not fenced, that's one paddock.
Right.
And that's where we take stock across the upper tier shrink from one side of the farm to the other. So it's fenced on the outside, on the inside of the stopping. So I actually don't try and graze that, this bit here. That's a buffer.
Right, oh, so you do have grass buffers on the farm?
Yes.
And how effective have you found those?
Oh, reasonable.
What do you usually have those?
Well, as I said before, we did them in the early days, so I just picked a line. And if it was a 5 metre setback, it's going to be rural, we probably wouldn't meet that. But a 3 metre loop, sometimes it's 3 metres, sometimes it's 10 metres. So we didn't know about the rules at the time, so I just fenced it.
Right, but what I'm hearing, I think, is it varies depending on the water body, the width of that buffer that you leave in grass.
I just do that because it's concentrated. It's a concentrated place where we work cattle across.
Right,
the place. So that's what that's for.
Right, I understand. Thank you. So the other topic was just around the wetlands and ephemerals. So if we go to paragraph 49, if you're evidence. So there you talk about the amount of ephemeral streams and water bodies on Loch Hill is unknown and would take months to ground truth.
Yep.
And ephemeral streams and water bodies are generally thought to be excluded from Schedule C. And then paragraph 51, you've got 6 constructed wetlands and an unknown amount of natural wetlands. You don't know where those are.
Yep.
And then you go on to talking about identifying the critical wetlands, I suppose. I'll get back to that, but I guess my question to you is that if you don't know where they are now, what hope do we have that they'll be managed in any farm environment plan?
Just the way we run the farm, as I said, it's fragile, and in the winter time, a lot of those wetlands are empty, they're dry, so there is no impact. The hardest time that we have, if we have a dry summer and then we get 2 inches of rain and in one hit, we've got no grass wedge to filter anything, so that gives us more damage than any time. So, we manage the wetlands by how much stock we put in the paddock. It's basically that.
But I suppose it means you know where they are.
Yeah.
There's many that you don't know that won't be managed. Even under an environment plan, would that be the case, isn't it?
It's noted in my environment plan and how we mitigate them.
But if you don't know where they are, how do you know them?
I do know where they are, but I don't know how many there are. They're in the bottoms of gullies, and some places I don't run cattle because they get stuck in there. Sheep get stuck in there, so you can only put a limited amount of stock in that paddock. It's just the topography of that farm.
Right, so, but I think the point has to be made that there are parts of your farm where you don't know where ephemerals or wetlands are.
Infernal, definitely not. I don't know the meaning. Well, I do know the meaning of it, but I'm struggling how it's interpreted by expert witnesses. When it rains, they're all rivers. So, we're not going to be able to do that. It's just not going to happen.
We had some evidence last week, and you might have heard it if you were here, from the dairy farmers for Fonterra that talked about apps, on your phone or devices that help you identify water bodies, for example. Do you have access to that kind of technology?
Yep.
So that could help you?
Yep.
And so, I just wanted to finally ask some questions about, you've got a fair bit of constructed wetlands, six I think,
yes,
on your property. What's involved in constructing wetlands?
Fetching them off and flying them out.
Right, so do you have to actually make them to construct them? They're already there?
No.
The
we just, basically they weren't wetlands. We made them filter systems. So they have four main catchments out of Rock Hill. Before they go into the Obatia stream, go through a filter system. That's as I call it. And we started that way back when we entered the environmental rules. That was how we tried to mitigate runoff to that from the farm.
Okay. And what's the cost involved in constructing a wetland?
Oh, I don't know.
You've got six of them.
Lots.
Lots.
60,000 if you start putting the trees in at $2 and $5 each,
right? Okay. And that's each?
Yep.
And how does that compare to fencing and maintenance?
On those, it's not too bad, because the fence is high enough that goes through. The fence is up to the wetlands, we have trouble with those. So we were fenced off the Mangatea stream. Those fences get taken out quite quickly for the reasons that I've
mentioned. And so I guess my question was that you've got areas that potentially need to be fenced, and then you've got constructed wetlands. The cost between fencing an area versus putting in a constructed wetland, is there much difference in cost there?
Alternatively, the wetland. The cost of the fencing on the internal waterways is going to be huge. And as I said, fencing is one thing, maintaining is another.
Mm-hmm.
And that. Yeah.
So the constructed wetlands is more viable then than maintenance?
Provide mitigation.
Sorry,
what's that? Provide mitigation.
But is it more viable to do constructive wetlands?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it is. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. Member of the authority.
Sir, I possibly will have to go next just due to the other council. I wanted to hear what I.
All right. No objection. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. So, you were in the courtroom when Dr. Rob Erickson from the Director General of Conservation gave evidence, weren't you?
I didn't hear him, no,
sure. Oh, you didn't? Okay. So wetlands do provide ecosystem services, and what he used the phrase, and I think that you've identified as one of those is the ability to provide attenuation for floods. And that's not just constructed wetlands, it's natural wetlands as well.
Yes.
So just the other issue is you've talked a lot about maintenance and fencing and what occurs in a flood.
Yep.
Dr. Daniel's evidence for fish and game, I'll read a section out to you. He says he believes adequate buffers are necessary to allow for the establishment of woody vegetation essential to stabilising the sediment riparian habitat and eventually in-stream habitat. And at paragraph 9.11 of his evidence, he says that a wide buffer planted with native trees and shrubs would increase the area available for streams to shift and reduce the long-term maintenance required due to the superior lifespan of native trees. So allowing the streams to shift and lowland streams avert potential flooding risks, do you consider that a wide buffer assists with that if it's planted?
Can I give you an example?
Sure.
There's an example where in just north of in Auckland River Farm that spent $600,000 on wetlands and planted, and it's now on the bottom of the gully.
What's in the bottom of the gully?
Well, it got washed out.
Okay, but what about the Waikato and in your farm?
On our farm, on the water events that we've had in the last half a dozen years would take them out.
Would take any fences out, no matter how far they are away from streams and where there was woody vegetation.
In our situation, yes, because we're like that. So it channels. Gullies.
But if you're in a gully, you would put the fence on the top of the gully, and so there would be a bank?
Well, that's where you can get it. So I stick to the soil, I don't think that's achievable.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for solving. Don't want to get a response here, Al. Federated Farmers?
Federated Soil?
No, thank you. Horticultural Season? No, thank you. River Iwi?
Mr. Robinson. Look, I just had a couple of questions of clarification more than anything, and it related to paragraph 47 of your revised letter of agreement. Might be you revised that paragraph or anything. And the issue of fencing. Now, I just wanted to check, as I may have shared your legal counsel as far as the estimate of 162.713 kilometres or 325.426 kilometres, if you double those times, obviously. That relates to all the water bodies on Lockyer, that's correct?
Yes.
And I think Ms. Lawrence said so that you've included, for the purpose of that calculation, ephemeral water bodies, if that's
yes.
Is that right? Yes. And do you know what the distance is if you exclude the ephemeral water bodies, approximately?
That was the ephemeral water bodies.
Well, that's just...
That's the total.
That, including the ephemeral, so does that permanent and intermittent waterways?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Including ephemeral waterways?
Yes.
And if you took out ephemeral waterways, being those that only fill when there's rainfall,
yep.
Do you know how much kilometres we're talking about?
100 k's.
About 100 k's, right. And is that 100, and some of that is fenced already, obviously, the 100 k's.
Sorry?
Some of that 100 kilometres is already fenced?
No.
Like this is
that'll
just
be
unfenced.
That'll be unfenced.
Right.
And that's the best guess.
Okay. And in terms of low slope land, you're obviously aware of the slope exclusion regulations
yeah. That
apply there. How much of this unfenced 100 kilometres would be on low slope land, you think, that would be covered by the regulations? Unfenced currently.
Unfenced currently?
Yeah.
Oh, not much. If you're talking about permanent waterways, is that what you're saying?
Permanent or intermittent, but not a permanent.
Yeah.
So of your 100 kilometres?
I'm sorry?
Of your 100 kilometres,
well,
that category.
I'll say 60 are already fenced.
60 of the 100 are already fenced.
No.
There's
160 kilometres.
Yes.
So I'd say there's probably 60 that's already fenced of the 160.
Right. Yes.
So all the flats are fenced. The main open tier, that's fenced. The mugger tier's fenced. The main water bodies, pretty much, apart from out the back, are pretty much all fenced.
Right.
So we don't run cattle because of the topography.
Alright, so the 162 kilometre includes stuff that you don't run cattle in?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Sorry, I was just trying to get a little bit of clarity about what still needed to be cleaned in terms of the stock exclusion regulation, regardless of what PC1 says. So you've still got fencing to do to comply with the stock exclusion regulation?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So I thought about 20 kilometres of distance. Now, obviously, one of the points that I'm not sure if you've made it, but others have made, is about the importance of providing reasonable time frames to do whatever fixing is required. And obviously, this plan change was notified in 2016. Do you know how much new fencing of waterways we've done since 2016?
We're doing it all the time. It's just work in progress.
So you are progressively fencing more and more waterways. And so you've got a... How much fencing have you got at the moment, do you think?
Oh.
About 60 kilometres, I think. Is that what you were saying?
40 k's.
And so, and how many kilometres of fencing would you do a year?
Depending. We're renewing fences on the farm at the same time, but we probably spend anywhere between 200,000 and 300,000 on fencing annually.
Annually, right.
Farm maintenance.
Okay, thank you very much. No further questions.
Four years ago.
Okay. And did you get professional advice to help you on that?
Yes.
Are you able, I'm willing to tell me roughly how much it costs to prepare a farm environment plan?
It costs us about $4,000.
Okay, thank you. And have you done any upgrading of it with professional advice since then?
Just a little bit, sort of.
Okay,
yeah.
And would you say that that complies with the farm environment plan regulations, or is it would it be worth it?
We were pretty good. There were things that we were good at, and there's things I needed to tidy up.
Okay.
Which we were doing.
Good. And what about the additional requirements of Plan Change 1? Has there been more work to be done?
We were far away.
Okay, so thank you very much. Now you mentioned filters.
Commissioner, while we're talking about the farm environment plan, I don't know whether you have seen the FEP that we've had presented to us by Mr. Hurst, Federated Farmers.
No, I haven't. Oh,
okay. Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, everyone at the back, I forgot about the microphone. just tell someone to give me a phone.
Okay. I'll be happy. Thank you. You're very well.
So when you're talking about filters, these would be on channels before they enter a water course, would that be right?
Correct.
And you've got four of them on the farm, is that right? Or are there smaller ones as well?
Yeah, well, we've got four main ones on the farm.
Okay, thank you, that's helpful. And you mentioned that the cost of fencing is huge. Have you got recent costs of getting a farm contractor in?
Yes.
What sort of dollars are you talking about?
We've got a rough measurement on the open tier, which we've got. Majority of both sides of that fence. In the last water event of this year, we spent $8,000 repairing. That was mainly labour. And we did that twice.
Well, that's in the last year?
Yes.
Have you got any recent costs for current new fencing?
They're about $24 a hectare. $24 a metre, sorry.
$24 a
metre.
Okay, thank you very much. That's very helpful, thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you very much. Anything arising out of those questions? No. Thank you very much for your advice, Mr. Robinson. Your excuse. Ms. Farrell, I think that's all for what you listened to.
Thank you, Robinson.
Thank you very much. All right. Now, I think then we would be moving to Mr. Hurst, wouldn't we? And I just wonder, Ms. Edwards, if we might just take the lunch break and come back at around 2 o'clock or shortly after 2 and start with Mr. Hurst's evidence.
Yes, thank you, Your Honour.
Very good.
The sitting of the
environment court is adjourned until 2 p.m.
Oh, there we go. No, no, it's fine. I think they've got that. Yeah.